Hello and welcome back to another inspiring episode of Trailblazing Leaders of Tomorrow. I'm Rhys Simone Lee and I'm here with my co-host Nathaniel. Today we have the privilege of speaking with Stephanie Boyce, a multi-award winning leader whose remarkable career has made significant strides towards promoting diversity and inclusion within the legal sector and beyond.
Absolutely, Ruth. Stephanie is the former president of the Law Society of England and Wales, making history in March 2021 as the 177th president, the sixth female to hold the position, and the first person of colour. Her leadership during her tenure was instrumental in navigating the profession through unprecedented challenges, including the COVID-19 pandemic.
In such challenging times, she not only maintained stability, but also played a crucial role in putting diversity at the forefront of the Law Society in the 21st century. Stephanie's inclusion and effective leadership style, coupled with her commitment to excellence and justice, has truly inspired many.
And after all that big introduction, Stephanie, just want to say we're really happy to have you here and taking the time to come and do this with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So to start off, we always kind of want to talk about the why behind your journey, like what sparked your initial interest in going through the direction that you did.
I think for me, it started at a very young age when perhaps I was dreaming big, thinking about all the things that I might become. But also at that time, in my younger days, I felt that there was a lot of injustices that I could see unfolding around the world, people whose voices were not being heard. And even though at that young age, I wanted to do more, I couldn't understand terribly why people's voices were being silenced. And there were a number of incidences around the world where that was playing out on the public stage. And of course, we didn't have social media as, you know, we have it now. So most of the news came through either the television or the radio. But what I wanted to do was make a difference. And that was very much cemented when I then, when we emigrated to America, and America would have a lasting impression upon me. I'd be absolutely overwhelmed by the poverty that I would see. Right. People's inability to access their rights because of the colour of their skin, because of their low socioeconomic status. And some of that, which is still playing out in lots of countries globally today. But I wanted to make a difference, and that fed my hunger to study law.
Of course, that's beautiful. I really resonate with that, coming from a similar background, studying law. Definitely fed into why I also pursued it. And then leading on from that, was there... You said you immigrated to America, but was there any other like specific moments or any individuals that significantly influenced your journey in being someone that pushes for change in your field and in the legal sector?
Absolutely. I mean, history is peppered with individuals who made a difference. I would like to think a positive difference. And, you know, just to name a few people, we've got Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr., Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, all of those individuals. But there are individuals known and unknown whose shoulders upon which I and many others stand, who have made that crooked path a bit more straighter, a bit more obvious, and a bit more equal, even though we still are advocating for that equality of opportunity, that equity in 2024, certainly in this country and globally. But also within my own home, I was told I could be anything I wanted to be as long as, you know, I had the character and the moral courage to stand up and be counted. And so for me, it wasn't about asking permission to do this. It was about having the confidence and the resilience to go on to do it. To become president, to study law, when people were telling me, think about doing something else, or never in our lifetime would we see somebody of an ethnic minority background become president, all of those things. Yep. So the more people told me I couldn't was the more that I could or wanted to say, I will, I can. And so there are many instances of people who have shaped my journey, and I'm grateful to every single one, as I say, known and unknown.
Yeah, and of course... like you're mentioning, there's always, you know, barriers that you need to break through and that kind of thing. Were there any kind of specific challenges that you recall that you found were really important to be able to overcome for you to be able to get to where you have on your journey?
Well, absolutely. And to be clear, I'm still navigating my way through those barriers today. I'm still learning about those barriers, seen and unseen. Yeah. But of course, there was initially, and there was the financial barriers. Right. I didn't have the financial currency to pursue a career. And certainly that's what shaped some of the decision to come back to England, because I graduated from high school in America and I did have a number of university offers there, but the costs were prohibitive.
Of course, yeah.
So, but I wanted to come back to this jurisdiction to study the law of the land that I was born in and within the jurisdiction of England and Wales, but also social currency. I didn't have those networks. I didn't have those networks to draw from in terms of work experience, but even down to knowledge. When do I apply? Where do I apply? I lived out and still live out in rural Buckinghamshire. So I didn't have, and let me have a think about this. Now I know plenty of people in my personal life who are lawyers, but I didn't know those. I didn't know individuals that I could say, help me. Yeah. And I came across a wonderful organisation called the Windsor Fellowship, which is still going today. Right. And I came across them my second year, if I remember correctly, at university. And they started to help me navigate some of those obstacles in terms of knowing when to apply, where to apply. I got some work experience, a scholarship at the then Lord Chancellor's Department. And remember, Jeff Hoon was the, I think he was the permanent secretary at that point to defence or something. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah. I got to go be chauffeur driven to the House of Commons to hear him speak. All of those things that would really cement this passion and drive that ambition.
So as you're saying about overcoming those instances, whether financial or social currency, what advice would you give to young professionals trying to navigate complex industries like law and governance?
Well, absolutely. The first advice I'd give is run your own race. Write your own story. And what I mean by that is far too often I hear people say, well, such and such didn't succeed. Or my aunt, my uncle, whoever told me law is not for people like me. Mm. And what I would say is that if I had listened to individuals who told me that the law was not for people like me, where would I be? Wouldn't have achieved what I had achieved. And like you said, Ruth, you know, to inspire you and many others to follow behind. So what my advice is, run your own race, write your own story, listen, learn, have a hunger to grow, to develop. Every day is a learning day. You have to be learning something new every single day. And if you're not, you have to ask yourself, why not? And sometimes, to borrow the words of Lisa Nichols, one of my favourite, she says she's not a motivational speaker, but I think she is. But she said that she had to step out of her neighbourhood in order to go back to be able to help her family, her friends. And sometimes you have to become uncomfortable in order to become comfortable. And sometimes that means you may have to step away from your friends and family in order to grow.
Yeah, I think some of the stuff you're saying is just really important, really powerful. I think especially in terms of, you know, being able to combat certain narratives we have in our lives, you know, sometimes it comes from, like you said, within our own homes. It comes from society telling us we're not able to do certain things, we're not able to get to certain places, and that kind of thing. I think it's really important, you know, to be able to, like you said, create your own narrative, to run your own race, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think also, you know, a part of that is, like you said, seeing other people in those positions, in those situations, to actually see I can be there, I can do that.
But also I would add, don't wait. You don't have to wait to see someone. Yeah. Absolutely. Because obviously, you know, there was no one that I could look up to in order to become president. And, you know, I spoke with a young lady the other day and she said she went into an organisation and she was just so disheartened to the point that she wanted to leave the law.
Oh, wow.
And I said, why? And she said, because what I knew or got to know about that organisation was that there were no black people in senior positions. And I said, but why were you disheartened? And she's like, I've just told you, because there were no black people in senior positions. And I said, but I still don't get why you're disheartened. I don't understand. And so anyway, she kept repeating that. And I said, The reason why I keep asking you the question is because I'm trying to understand what drove your decision, i.e., and then I had to explain to her, I said, because I would have gone into that organisation and I said, I would have seen there were no black people there and I would have seen opportunities.
Right.
I would not have fed into the negative.
No, of course, you've got to always, when you're, especially with law, industries that are very difficult, you've got to always choose to see the positive, see it glass half full rather than half empty.
Absolutely.
So she should have seen it as an opportunity to go in there and be the first black representative. But sometimes it's hard, but then you've got to listen to the people that are inspiring and kind of find things that give you the motivation to pursue the things you want to pursue. Because at the end of the day, I've said it to these lot and I say it to other people, life will keep going and it will leave you behind. It's not going to wait for you. So you've got to keep running your race no matter what comes in your face.
Absolutely. So, and she took my advice. And so
it's very good.
She's reignited with passion.
Lovely. I'm glad to hear that. And then we wanted to move on and speak a bit more about your roles within leadership. So being president of the Law Society for England and Wales and obviously being board member for a lot of other organisations, how do you define effective leadership, particularly in navigating diverse organisations?
How do I define it? Effective leadership?
Yeah.
Effective leadership to me is someone who can see the bigger picture, someone who is visionary, someone who sees the potential where others might see obstacles, but someone who is willing to confront those challenges, those obstacles, and think about, actually, how can I overcome those rather than seeing them as an obstacle that can't be overcome? Mm-hmm. And believing that solutions are within reach if we work together. And that perhaps is where, you know, the phrase, one of the phrases that I put out there is that every door is open if you push. You persevere until something happens. And my notion is that some people will get to a door or you're going down a particular road and this is a metaphoric road and you're not getting anywhere or you come across a dead end. Mm. Some people will say, that's it. There's nowhere for me to go. Other people will say, well, OK, it's a dead end. I need to turn back. I need to go and try and find a different way in order for me to progress. And it is that resilience, that determination, that ability to see the bigger picture, to be able to take people with you through constant communication, through constant clarity, through diplomacy, integrity, authenticity, all of those things that feed into effective leadership. You've got to be able to take people with you. And when people understand that journey, they will want to absolutely join it with you.
Thank you for the answer. It was very beautiful.
Yeah. And so at the Society of Leadership Fellows, you support others in becoming better leaders. Mm-hmm. And something you mentioned earlier was that when you started, you know, there was no social media. It was a very different world. And obviously things change so much so quickly. So what do you think are the essentials for leaders in today's society, especially with like modern day challenges that have kind of evolved over time?
Absolutely. Some of those I've mentioned, I touched upon already, but given the current geopolitical stage and everything that's going on that's feeding into some of the disputes and conversations that we're having or not having or should be having, I think for me, it's about empathy. We've seen that, you know, we've seen those leaders who are notably, dare I say it, lots who've been female, who are able to be empathetic, who able to just take a breather, take a step back and just approach things with a bit of empathy, a different narrative, kindness. One of my favourite quotes is, I probably paraphrase it very incorrectly, but in a world where we can be anything, be kind. Mm-hmm. That seems to have evaporated of late. But honesty, honesty is an absolute must. And humility as well. All of those things that feeds into one's character. And again, if people can see the warmth inside of you, the authenticity with you, they will want, and the diplomacy and the kindness and all of those things, they will want to absolutely follow you as a leader. But a leader is not just somebody whose people will follow, because I think you know, we've got plenty of people who are leaders, quote unquote, they're not effective, dare I say it. And I think also the way we think about leaders in this country needs to change. And that was one of the things when people would say to me, gosh, when I became president, aren't you very articulate? You know, don't you present well? Well, dare I say it, that whatever this is, it was always there. What presidency gave me was a platform to amplify lots of what this is and for people to listen. But we need to think about who we put in positions of power and influence and what we think they should look like and sound like.
Very nice. Everything you're saying today is very inspiring. I'm sitting here just going, I absolutely love all of this. Yeah, it is a pleasure to meet you. I just keep being reminded of that. And then around definitely being a woman listening to what you're saying today, one of the questions I really wanted to ask you was, what do you see is the most effective ways to promote gender equality and remove structural barriers for women in law and other fields?
I think the whole... So I stepped out of private practice very early in my career. And some of that was because of... I didn't want to work long hours. I didn't like the way that things were structured, the billable hours, the long hours. I had some colleagues who I'd gone to law school with, and you text them like on a Saturday or something and say, do you want to go out clubbing or do you want to meet up, whatever? And they'd say, oh, I'm doing an overnighter. I probably won't get out the office till 3 a.m., whatever. Yeah. And my heart would just sink. And then, of course, when I did my training contract, again, that was in private practice. In-house wasn't spoken about much. I didn't really know about in-house. I think I stumbled across it by accident, having been made redundant twice in as many years from practices on the high street. I even moved home. I moved from Buckinghamshire to go to Huntingdonshire, which I think it's more Cambridgeshire, really, to take up a post. Right. But then again, and then moving back to Watford and got made redundant. So all of those things. But I think in terms of those structural barriers, it's about the way that the private practice and lots of organisations are structured, hamper, if you've got caring responsibilities, childcare responsibilities, the ability to get ahead, some of those unspoken rules. Some people call it codes, whatever the narrative is around that. It's understanding what is required in order to get ahead. Flexible work policies. Of course, we've got a government now that's talking about flexible working. But we also need to address the bias in hiring and creating those environments that once people get in, how do we get them to stay in? How do we get them to thrive, to progress, to really showcase their skills and their attributes? Because it shouldn't matter what your gender, your race, your... It shouldn't matter, you know, in all of the diverse characteristics, it shouldn't matter. Yeah. What should matter is based on merit, based on skills, ability. Those should be the determinants as to how you should get ahead. But we need more inclusive work environments rather than tick box environment, working environments.
I definitely agree with that.
Yep. And as commissioner for the National Preparedness Commission...
Gosh, you guys have done your homework.
We really did.
Yeah, there's a lot to read about you. So you help promote readiness for a major crisis. And, you know, we've seen the last couple of years, the world's very unpredictable, perhaps more so than people kind of realised, especially, you know, in the UK where people might feel a bit insulated from things. What qualities do you believe leaders need to cultivate, to navigate through different crises in an effective way?
I think you need, as a leader, you need an ability to listen and actively listen. And I think one of the issues that we're seeing is that there are a couple of quote unquote leaders who like the sound of their own voice. They will only position people around them who will support their position or agree with what they say. And there is a danger in doing that. Because if you only surround yourself with people who only want to hear what you've got to say and will only agree with what you've got to say, is actually you have locked out a whole bunch of voices, diverse voices. And when I say diverse, I'm not just talking about the nine characteristics that make up or when we think about diverse, I'm thinking about just diversity of thought. I'm thinking about, you know, diversity of experience and skills and so forth. So... in terms of what makes a good leader, it is absolutely the ability to listen, to communicate. And, you know, it's about building trust as well. If you can build trust and you can build loyalty, that's what makes an effective leader. And not building trust on dishonesty or fake news or whatever else. It's about giving people the right information, the correct information in a timely way, and, you know, and letting them, empowering them to discern for themselves as to whether or not they want to be part of whatever it is that you are offering or trailing.
Before we get into looking at your legacy, I want to know what key piece of advice would you give to aspiring leaders, young professionals, those maybe a bit further in their career that would like to make a bigger impact than they've already made so far?
I think for me, it's about, you know, there's a passage in scriptures that talks about, and again, I'm not going to quote it verbatimly, but it talks about the lesson is not in how many times I got knocked down. It was in how did I get up? And the four attempts it took me to become president. Of course, it was a bitter sting when I did not get on the three previous occasions when I was not successful. I don't like the word failure. Yeah. For me, the word failure has a negative connotation. But those setbacks, what they allowed me to do was it allowed me to step back, to reflect on what it was that I was trying to achieve, to look at who some of those successful individuals were. What were they offering? How were they positioning themselves? What could I learn from them? What could I take away from those three previous experiences that then fed into my fourth successful attempt? And I would have kept going. I would have kept going. If it took me a fifth, sixth, seventh, I would have kept going, because that was the passion that was feeding into, and because I wanted to make a pain of myself anyway. But it was that belief, that hunger for me to get there. So the advice is to keep going, develop your mindset, a growth mindset, which goes back to what I said about every day being a learning day. There are plenty of examples out there, plenty of literature and so forth, and videos, not necessarily on TikTok. I'm not a fan of TikTok. I think everybody should stay off of it. It should be banned, along with some other social media. But we live in a democracy. But you've got to be able to know which bits to, whether that's TikTok or any other social media or any information that's coming your way, you've got to be able to discern which bits are going to serve you and others, and which bits are not going to help.
Lovely.
And to reflect on your journey as a whole, you've made really significant contributions within legal and beyond, some of which you've spoken about today, a lot which we haven't as well. So what legacy do you believe that you've already left? And then how do you then want to shape it going forwards? Because obviously, as you said, your journey's not done. Yeah. There's still more to navigate. There's still a lot more, you know, that we haven't even spoken about.
Absolutely. When I received the call to say on the fourth occasion that I had successfully won the election, it took my breath away. It still takes my breath away to hear you, Nathaniel, and indeed, Ruth, you say about all of those achievements. Mm-hmm. My older brother said to me the other day, Rodney, he said to me, "Sis, in 100 years' time, 200 years' time, they'll be talking about you. Do you realise what you've done?" I started the journey because, as I say, I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to serve. I remain of the commitment and promise to serve. And I wanted to showcase that, as I say, that talent is found every and anywhere. That to have that, to build that vision of hope and resilience and determination. But my tenure highlighted the need for structural change. And open doors for more diverse talent to walk through. I will continue to showcase. I will continue to raise my voice, to open doors, to lift as I climb, in the great words of Mary Terrell Church. So the legacy for me is that the difference, the positive difference I have made, and to hear others recount that, and to talk about how inspired they are. Takes my breath away. It's amazing. So thank you very much.
Stephanie, actually, the last point I was going to make, you've touched on it already, but I was going to leave you and the audience with one of Stephanie's quotes, which is, she's already said slightly a little bit of it already, but I will read the whole thing out. Your dream, your vision belongs to you. See your setbacks not as the end, but as an opportunity to try again. The lesson wasn't in how many times did I get knocked down, but in how did I get up. When I was researching Stephanie, these were some of the words I discovered, and I am just really resonated with me, and I wanted to bring this today to the podcast. And that is everything for today, guys. Thank you for listening in. Thank you, Stephanie, for being here.
Thank you so much.
You, Nathaniel, for co-hosting with me.
No, honestly, it's an honor to be here and to like heard all the wisdom you brought to the table. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you.